Hello, you are listening to Leeds Student Radio with me, your host Matt, and a very warm welcome to you for listening into A Glimpse of China. Now, last week we talked about the Chinese education system, summing up the teaching methods that are used in China, sort of the copying down what the teacher has written and learning answer after answer after answer. We also discussed the importance attached to education and also the incredibly high pressure within it in China. So that was last week. Now this week we're going to be moving on to talking about a very unique and important part of Chinese culture, and that is Chinese festivals. So I'm sure everybody out there has heard of Chinese New Year, but did you also know that China has festivals such as the Moon Festival, National Day, and the Dragon Boat Festival? Well, if you didn't, then today is your chance to find out about them with our guest Izzy, who has experienced them all.
This is an exclusive interview from Leeds Student Radio.
So yes, our special guest today is Izzy. She is a former student of Chinese and Spanish at the University of Leeds and is now working in the Confucius Institute here at Leeds. So how are you today, Izzy?
I'm really good, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, and it's great to have you with us today. So just a couple of questions to get to know you a little bit better. Obviously, you studied Chinese as your degree. So what made you interested in China and Chinese culture?
Well, it's a bit of a tricky question. I always get asked that by relatives and friends when they hear about studying Chinese. I think it's a bit random and different. I think it's partly because my mum, she studied acupuncture. So we have a lot of Chinese medicine books around the house. And I always saw these kind of Chinese characters and thought, what does that mean? What's that about? And I didn't really understand Chinese medicine. And it's so different to Western ideas. So that sort of got me interested. And then also the lack of education we have about China. I think in primary, secondary school, would you agree that...
Yeah, definitely. It's a lot of people don't know a thing about China. And I have to say, before I started doing my degree in it, I didn't really either.
Exactly. You're focused on ancient Egypt and Victorians and World War II and...
And yet there's this great big country out there called China, which has gone through an enormous amount of history that people don't know about. Yeah,
exactly. So I had a kind of basic understanding of Chinatown and sort of understand like the kind of generics of Chinese food we get in the UK. But I didn't really fully grasp the nuances of the culture until studying it. And I didn't, you can't really describe China, I mean, in a sentence, can you? It's so diverse, so many, 56 ethnic groups, thousands of languages, dialects. It's so vast. There's just... so much to understand that's why I felt like I wanted to study it.
And that is something that is really unknown, really, isn't it? I mean, a lot of people think of the Chinese as one nation and all very, very connected. Chinese food is all the same, whereas actually every part of China is different, isn't it?
Exactly.
Right, so that's great to hear about your interest in Chinese culture there. So you have spent a year in China as part of your degree. So based on your experience, what would you say is the biggest difference between life in China and the UK?
Well, I think one of the major things I noticed while living there, because we studied at the university in China, and I kind of compared my experience at the UK university to the Chinese students I met and saw around me. And their work ethic was just completely different. I mean, you saw people queuing up for the library in the morning from... about 6 in the morning to before class started. And I know a lot of UK students are very hardworking and will stay in late at night, but this was another, like, people with staying in the library 24 hours, eating in there, sleeping in there. It was quite different.
It's part of the culture over there that everybody is hardworking, really, isn't it? And I think it does vary a little bit within university students, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, they go through a lot of pressure in the secondary school. And then when they get to university, there are some students, and perhaps it is a minority, there are some students that do drop off. But it does vary, of course.
Yeah, exactly. It was so different. And also the fact with, I did a bit of English tutoring when I was there, like so many other UK students do. And I met so many children who barely had any free time. They would come out, finish class, have a English tutor, French tutor, maths tutor, learning an instrument. They would have sports, extra sports classes. Their whole weekend, all their afternoons, all planned out for them by their parents. That some of them even barely had time to watch TV or films or just be a child.
And it starts from a very young age, that kind of pressure, doesn't it? You know, from primary school, their life is already pretty much planned out.
Exactly.
So it's quite scary to think about, really, isn't it?
But yeah.
I think it's part of the thing that has come in the one child generation, where so much is expected of the one child that the parents have.
Yeah.
And so a lot of pressure is put on them to make sure that they can achieve their best.
Exactly.
Okay, well, great to hear about your experience in China then and your interest in Chinese culture. So just to move on to talk about our topic today, which, as I mentioned, is Chinese festivals. And there are a huge number of them with various different traditions, various different stories behind them. So based on your experience in China, how would you say festivals are generally celebrated?
I suppose in a similar way to the UK, like our Christmas festivals, I believe that there's a lot of focus on the family, about returning to home, having big meals together, celebrating it together, the kind of reunion idea.
Yeah.
But also there's so many distinct festivals in China, it's hard to sum them all up in a sentence. There's a sort of focus on remembering all your ancestors and looking back in time.
Yeah, definitely. And there's sort of respecting your elders and your ancestors is part of the Chinese culture, isn't there?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think also decorations are similar to the UK. China goes a bit mad with all the decorations. You see red everywhere, from hangings on the door, lanterns. It's really quite beautiful, but quite overwhelming at the same time.
It is, isn't it? Especially around Chinese New Year. Some of the parks are absolutely filled with lanterns and all sorts of decorations for Chinese New Year. They get a really festive kind of environment going around. Okay, so I wanted to talk a little bit about Chinese New Year, which I'm sure everybody out there has heard of, but they may not know much about it. So it is celebrated around January or February time of the year, and that is on the first day of the Chinese calendar, which is based on the moon. It lasts for 15 days, ending on the Lantern Festival, which is part of the Spring Festival, another name for Chinese New Year. Now, I'm sure you've also heard that every year has a different zodiac animal associated with it, and there are 12 of them in total. And so everybody is given a zodiac based on which year they are born in. We're currently in the year of the sheep. And each of the zodiacs have different meanings, and some are considered especially lucky or unlucky. And it is a time for family gathering, and it is the longest holiday that Chinese people get all year, and one of the fewest holidays that Chinese people get in general. So, I mean, some people might compare Chinese New Year to Christmas over here. So, Izzy, based on your experience, would you say that it is celebrated in a similar way to Christmas?
I'd say the major parts of the Spring Festival are, because all shops, restaurants, museums all close down during that central Spring Festival time, which means as a Westerner, you're sort of stuck. You have to kind of plan ahead, buy food, organise your life, because not everything's going to be open as you expect normally in January and February.
Yeah.
Which was quite a surprise. And also, I think the kind of the family getting together and this travelling was really interesting. When you're trying to travel at the same time, there's just tickets are so difficult to get for trains, for buses. There's just a huge movement of people. All the public transport's packed constantly. It's just like there's this whole kind of feeling of energy and everyone moving and getting on. It's quite exciting but kind of daunting at the same time.
It is. I once had a friend compare it to kind of a war starting, the way everybody's moving about. And that is, of course, actually part of the Chinese tradition of urbanization, or the Chinese trend, I should probably say, of urbanization. So there are a lot of people from rural areas or from smaller cities that have gone to the bigger cities to find work and to gain experience. And then Chinese New Year is their time to go back to their hometown, which is why tickets can be so difficult to buy. Okay, and so you've mentioned some of the decorations and things that you saw around Chinese New Year. What would you say is the most intriguing thing about the festival?
I think it's got to be the kind of whole focus on fortune and good luck. And I mean, Chinese people during around Spring Festival, they usually give out these red envelopes called hongbao. And these, you'd put money in and you'd give them to friends and family. And this is all about kind of sharing the fortune, there's also this character for in Chinese, which means good fortune, just fu, and they would stick this fortune up on their front doors, inside their house, on these red squares, and sometimes they would invert it because they'd want the fortune to enter the house and fall into the house. So I think that's so fascinating.
And it is interesting to learn about all of the different meanings of the characters and how some characters are pronounced in the same way as others. And then that can mean that some words are unlucky or lucky based on what they're pronounced similar to. So, for example, a good example of that is the number four, which is pronounced su. And the word for death, which is pronounced su, so very similar, just with a different tone. And so the number four is actually associated with death in China. So not a very lucky number at all over there.
Exactly. That's like, did you hear about the Peugeot company, the car company? They tried to launch this car in China, the Peugeot 4. Yeah. And obviously it completely failed because no one wanted to get into a car that was called death. Yeah. Associated with death.
And it is interesting how these kind of superstitions, I guess, are still obeyed by, are still believed in by Chinese people. You know, if you go into buildings in China, it's very rare to see a fourth floor or a 14th floor for that matter. You know, it goes from 3 to 5 and 13 to 15. So that's a very intriguing one.
Exactly. I think also, you know, the gift giving, you can give, I mean, there was a recent diplomatic issue when someone tried to give a Chinese delegation a watch or a clock. And basically, if you give a clock, it sounds like you're kind of wanting the person to die or you're looking forward to their death, because to give a clock in Chinese, the words are song zhong, which has the exact, it's a homophone for attending a funeral, which has the same pronunciation but different characters. So you have to be really careful when you're gift giving in China.
I think there's a few of those as well. You know, the ones, a pair of shoes, which is xie, and it's pronounced similar to evil as well. And so you can't really give that, give shoes as a gift either. And then another thing which has actually impacted on society, or is expected to really impact on society, is the fact that, as I said earlier, we are currently in the year of the sheep. And the year of the sheep is seen as being an unlucky year in China. There's a kind of saying which says 9 in 10 sheep will die. And so what has actually happened is that there's been quite a dramatic fall in the birth rate during this year. And that is expected to pick up next year in the year of the monkey, which is lucky again. And that's expected to put quite a lot of pressure on some Chinese hospitals who won't have the spaces in the beds for all of those babies, which I think is quite incredible, really, you know, that people pay attention to these kind of superstitious and lucky numbers and things and zodiacs so much. Now, coming up later in the show, we are going to be talking about the National Day, and we're also going to be talking about some of the most intriguing festivals, or some of the things that has particularly surprised our special guest here about Chinese festivals. Now, the song that I'm going to put on today is a fairly unique one, I guess. It's called Tao Ma Gan, which literally means a lasso on a long wooden pole. Now, a lasso being the thing that you kind of hit a horse with to restrain it. And so part of the traditional Chinese culture was to restrain the horses with these lassos, which were on long wooden poles. So that's what today's song is called. And it's by Wu Lan Tuo Ya. So enjoy.
Oh, shine. 给我一片
That was Tao Ma Gan, Lasso on a Long Wooden Pole. And you are listening to Leeds Student Radio. A very warm welcome back to listen to A Glimpse of China with me, your host Matt, and our special guest today, Izzy. So as I mentioned earlier, Izzy is working at the Confucius Institute in Leeds at the moment. And so I thought I'd take this opportunity for you out there to learn a little bit more about what goes on at the Confucius Institute. So Izzy, as you're the expert, what does the Confucius Institute do then?
Okay, basically, we're part of the business school, so it's a business-focused Confucius Institute, which is one of only, I think there's only five of them in Europe, these business-focused ones. Mm. And basically, it aims to promote the understanding of Chinese culture and language within the UK, and also to facilitate commerce between China and Yorkshire. So we do a lot of cultural events, cultural workshops, focusing on different Chinese festivals and different aspects of Chinese culture, alongside a lot of Chinese language courses, which we do for the beginner, intermediate and advanced speakers of Chinese, which they can also go on to do the HSK exam, which is a kind of internationally recognized examination, which assesses the candidate's level of Chinese language, which is really useful to have on your CV because everyone knows what that means, what level you are, and they'll understand how good your Chinese is. Mm. So a lot of different things.
Great. So it seems like a very, very good opportunity to both to engage in the Chinese language, Chinese business and Chinese culture, really. So a great opportunity to put us in contact with Chinese culture, in spite of the fact that it's a country that is thousands of miles away from here and so different from us as well, as we've been discussing as part of today's show. Right. OK, so thank you very much for that. Now, back on to the main topic of today's show, which is Chinese festivals. Now, we have generally been discussing Chinese New Year in our first part of today's show. But there are some other quite intriguing and special festivals around China that I'd also quite like to talk about today. And one of them is the National Day holiday, which is celebrated on October the 1st every year. It's a 1 week holiday, which is quite a considerable holiday in China. And the week is also known as Golden Week. And what the festival is about is commemorating the founding of the People's Republic of China, which was formed in 1949 when the communists defeated the nationalists to then become the ruling party of the country. So Izzy, based on your experience, what would you say Chinese people do around National Day? Is it the same as Chinese New Year, or are there some differences?
It's slightly different. I mean, the official activities happen in Tiananmen Square. They have a military parade, which is sort of blocked off the whole of the square, and it's all very official. Mm. But on a more local level, it's mostly travelling. People go and explore new places. Some go home to their families again in a similar way to Chinese New Year. And there's really, really hectic travelling. This is almost as bad as Spring Festival. I think it was the first time I saw this sort of travel situation when because I arrived in China in August. This was the first time. And it was just crazy. You'd see, because in China, train tickets are a bit different to the UK. So they're only sold about 2 weeks before the date of the travel.
Yeah.
So there are queues and queues outside of ticket shops, stations, which makes it so intense for buying tickets. You have to really know where you want to go, queue up and get your tickets as quickly as possible, as soon as they're available.
Yeah, and even for the people that get there early to queue, it's often not possible. I mean, when I was in China, I was trying to buy train tickets on the official train ticket website. It was sort of, I mean, it got to 12 o'clock on the day when the tickets went on sale for the journey that I wanted. I was there with three different payments methods ready, just in case one of them didn't work, and they're ready to press the green button as soon as it turned green. And I still didn't get it, even though I was there before, you know, the tickets started selling. And it's just absolutely incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think around National Day, it is generally to go travelling more than to go home. Mm. It's seen as a time to get out and see the rest of China. Okay. And so we've obviously talked about two festivals there. They are the main two in China. But there's also lots of different little festivals. And you mentioned the kind of focus on remembering the ancestors and the focus on family life and things like that around the times of festivals. So what would you say is the most interesting festival for you?
Well, my favourite festival is actually slightly tied into the New Year, as it's the last, like you mentioned earlier, it's the last day of Chinese New Year, which is the Lantern Festival. This takes place on the 15th day of the first month of the lunar calendar. So this year in 2015, it was March the 5th. And this is it's the first day of the full moon in the new year. So it marks the return of spring and symbolises family reunion. So people usually go and light lanterns and write riddles on lanterns, which people try and guess. Mm. There's also a special food you're meant to eat on this festival called tangyuan. These are glutinous rice balls, which are filled with black sesame paste, rose petals or red bean paste. And the name tangyuan, it sounds quite similar to tuanyuan, which means a group reunion. Yeah. So their name and their shape symbolise togetherness. And I really like that festival. I think it's just a time for just admiring the beautiful scenery of China with these gorgeous lanterns and everything's decorated so well.
Mm. Yeah, and definitely you mentioned just there the tangyuan as a typical food of the Chinese lantern festival. And that is something that is very typical of Chinese festivals in general, that they all have a certain type of food associated with them. Often got a story behind it as well. Like, for example, the Dragon Boat Festival. They eat a food that is called zongza. And that is basically it looks very intriguing, actually. It's a bamboo leaf, and it's got glutinous rice in the middle. And then often with some meat or with some some red bean paste or sesame paste or something like that. And that was basically based on a story where a man was thrown into a river. And then to stop him being eaten, they threw out the zongza to the fishes so that they were attracted by the zongza, the food, rather than the man. So that's obviously quite an intriguing part of Chinese festivals.
I'm also quite fascinated by how commercial some of the Chinese festivals are becoming in a similar way to the UK. For example, they've just celebrated the Singles Day, which was on the 11th of November. And it was kind of started like kind of anti-Valentine's Day, celebrating being single. And because the 11th of the 11th looks like four single chopsticks. However, this has now become a kind of almost like a Chinese Black Friday, because the founder of the Chinese website Alibaba, which is like a Chinese Amazon, he turned it into this sort of huge sale event. And it's this year, I think it broke records and there were sales of over 91.2 billion yuan, or about 9.4 billion pounds.
Blimey.
By the close of trade. It was just incredible. It's just so surprising when you sort of take this festival and turn it into sort of commercial.
Yeah, and I think Chinese girls, Chinese women would take the opportunity to buy things at discount prices really readily. you know, they loved their shopping and their luxury brands and their clothes, the bags and all of that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Right. Well, we have come to the end of today's show. So a very big thank you to Izzy for being with us and talking about all of the fascinating and special Chinese festivals, including National Day, Chinese New Year, and the Singles Day, which happened just a few weeks ago. So next week on our show, we will be talking more about Chinese family life. Now, it's something that we've touched on today in today's show, talking about the Chinese New Year and what goes on around there within the family. But we're going to have two Chinese students next week to talk us through the issue so we can get their unique perspective on it. So we'll be finding out about what Chinese New Year means to them and the kind of activities that they go with their families and how the one child policy has also affected family life. So join us next week on Tuesday at 12:30. That's the same time to hear more about that. But for now, that's all we've got time for. Have a good week. Bye-bye.